Hey.
Good evening.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
What? That was weird.
Was that weird?
Yeah.
It was not that weird. So, what's going on, Nick?
Not much. How about you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, so it's just me and Nick here right now.
Yeah, Jared's on his way.
He is definitely on his way.
He'll be here, like, I don't know, in 5 minutes.
Yeah, we started early, even though he's going to be here in like 5 minutes. We're like, we can't wait anymore. So this is the 41st Big Planet Comics podcast.
That is a lot.
It does seem like a lot, doesn't it?
We're almost at 50. What are we going to do for 50?
I don't know. I feel like we need to definitely do like some special something or another.
We should.
Yeah. But what? What are we going to do?
We should ask the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
What should we do?
What should we do? Send us an email at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com.
There you go.
Yeah. So let me do the rigmarole.
I'll do it.
Yeah. You can listen to this podcast however you're listening to it. You can subscribe on iTunes.
Yep.
Check us out on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You can tweet us at Big Planet Comics. Yeah.
That's it, right?
Those are the regular things. Oh,
wait. Don't forget about the phone number.
Oh, yeah. We do have a phone number. Oh, I have to find it on here. Yeah, yeah. Or you can send us questions always at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Or you can call the podcast hotline at 703-539-CAST.
Yeah. Do it.
It's exciting stuff. So what's been going on, Nick?
You know, the usual stuff. I've been trying to catch up on Walking Dead recently. I've been pretty far behind.
How's that been going?
Oh, my God. It's so good. This current storyline is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it just finished up.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited about the next one because it introduces Daryl from the show into the comics.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Like, I mean, Daryl's everybody's favorite character on the show. Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely makes sense.
It's definitely weird. Like, I wonder, like, yeah, it's weird that somebody is, that the show is affecting the comics, which is, it's not a common thing.
Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Does it feel weird to not have Jared here in this little intro thing?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, like, hey, Jared, what have you been up to? And he's not even here to answer.
He's like, well, I went to the DC Film Festival.
That's true. That is what he did.
See a movie.
That's why he's not here right now.
And I'll be at the podcast soon.
Yeah. So we have something exciting on this episode, though.
Do we?
Yeah. Oh, I should say, let's see. What have I been up to? I saw Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, God. I still have to see it.
Oh, dude, it's so good.
I'm going.
Yeah. Tomorrow. I can't believe you haven't seen it. Are you going to see it tomorrow?
I'm gonna try to.
Good. It's definitely the kind of movie that is you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And the kind of movie that you can't talk about unless somebody's actually seen the movie. Yeah. So I'm not actually gonna say anything about it.
Nice.
But yeah, definitely see it. And anybody out there, if you like Buffy or you like horror movies.
Or you like anything that's good.
If you like anything that's good, go see it.
No.
People were grumbling coming out of the movie theater though. They were like,
blah, blah, oh, blah, really? Blah, blah.
Cause it's not, you know, it's just not a straight up horror movie. Yeah, so but we've got an interview on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
We had a signing. Oh, yeah. By the way, we had some signings coming up, too. We got on Free Comic Book Day, May 5th, Jeremy Whitley and Jorge Aguirre.
Yeah.
Of Princeless and Giants Beware, respectively.
Both excellent.
Yeah, both excellent.
Bring your kids.
Bring your whole family. Bring everybody you know. It's going to be hectic.
It's going to be crazy. Some cosplayers told me they're coming by, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like different cosplayers than the Ghostbusters we have coming?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what they're cosplaying as?
I have no idea.
That's pretty exciting.
I know the one guy has at least one Phantom X costume.
A Phantom X costume? Oh, that's awesome.
But I don't know what else is coming. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm excited about
He asked
that.
Me today. He's like, can we come? I was like, sure, of course.
Sure, do whatever.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah, I was like, it just makes it even better.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
We're going to have all these free comics, all these crazy people.
Yeah. Ghostbusters?
Yeah, we're definitely going to have some Ghostbusters. There may even be an Ecto-1.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. But so this last Saturday, we had Justin Jordan and Trad Moore, the guys who did Strange Tale and Luther Strode.
Nice guys.
Yeah, super nice guys. Yeah. And they did an interview for us.
All right.
Yeah, should we listen to it?
Yes.
All right, let's go ahead and listen to it.
Put it on.
All right, I'm here with Trad Moore and Justin Jordan, the guys that made the Strange Tale and Luther Strode. How's it going?
Good.
Very good.
Awesome. Let's see. What should we do first here? Can you tell people what Luther Strode's about?
Yes, Trad, can you?
I can. It's usually Justin who does this part. Luther Strode. I'm just going to try to copy everything that I've heard you say. Luther Strode is about this, like, nerdy high school kid, Luther. He orders out for one of those Charles Atlas-y, get buff quick type ads from the back of a comic book. And as it turns out, it works really, really well. And he gets superpowers. But as it turns out, it was sent to him by an ancient murder cult who is looking to induct new members. And nefarious things ensue. So
awesome. Yeah, ancient murder cults.
That was pretty good.
There we go. Yeah, I tried.
They always need new members.
They do, yeah.
So did you guys come up with this together, or did you write, Justin, did you write it independently? And how did you guys get together on this in the first place?
I had the idea, and I wrote up an outline for it. And then I will make love to this microphone. And then I... I started out, I wrote up an outline, and I wrote like 7 pages of it, and then I was out looking for an artist, and I came across Trad's DeviantArt page, and I shot him an email, and then it went from there. I only had but 7 pages written when I did him, yes.
Oh, scary.
Now you know how comics work, folks, when I got Trad on the book.
So how did you guys hook up with Image? How does that whole thing work, really?
It was just a straight out blind submission process. I sent them an email. It was an email, cover letter, 7 pages art, cover, and that was it. They picked it up really quickly.
It was funny with the people ask me about the submission process a whole lot, and I feel bad telling them how we did it because we literally just did what the Image website tells you to do. Like, we just got on there, went to the submission section, followed the rules, and it ended up working for us, you know what I mean? Because I think people are looking for some magic direction into how to do it, and
there isn't any.
I think at the bottom it should say, like, and also make sure it's good.
Yes, yeah. That's the trick. Honest that is God, the trick.
Like, a lot of people really stress out about the submission process, and of course we did follow the rules, but I think as long as your book is good, that's the part that really matters. Like, they're not going to say, well, this book's good, but you made your cover letter a sentence too long, so yeah. Like, that's not how Image rolls usually. But yeah, people, I always feel bad, like Trad does. I'm like, there's no secret. Like, we didn't do anything special, like, in terms of the submission, so.
Well, and it is a good book. I mean, it seems like it's getting a really good reaction from everybody. Have you guys been surprised, or, I mean, you must be excited about it.
Yeah, I was actually just talking about it with some people this morning. It's, we had no idea, you know, how it was going to do, how it was going to sell. You know, we didn't even know that it was going to be on the cover of Diamond Previews when it was. Image has just done a really great job of plugging it, and luckily it's gotten a great reaction from fans and stuff, and it's been awesome to kind of get feedback from everyone and hear that everyone's been enjoying it. You know, it's been pretty surreal. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty great. You don't know when you send your book out into the world how it's going to react. Like, I thought it was a good book. I thought, you know, I know it's the best book I was capable of writing. So I was, that part I was pretty confident about. But whether or not other people would think that was iffy. So the fact that the reaction has been generally, like, overwhelmingly positive, and, you know, it's gotten, I got a good amount of critical and commercial success, has been really awesome. Like, it's done better than I could ever hope for. I just wanted to get all 6 issues out. So,
yep.
So is that what's led into being able to actually do a second one? Was this planned as one book, or did you guys plan on doing more at the beginning? Or
it's planned. The book is self-contained. Like, if we only got to do this, there's a story there and has a beginning and a middle one and the end. But I knew before we sent it in, even, that there was more stuff that we could do with that universe, for lack of a better term. So I wanted to be able to do more. I was hoping we'd be successful enough that it would be in our interest to actually do it. Like, there's, you know, a certain level of success you need to actually sucker Trad into doing another 1,000 hours worth of work, and Felipe as well. But yeah, so I kind of had a three series arc in mind from the beginning, but they should be relatively self-contained.
Awesome. Yeah, speaking of Felipe, the coloring in this book is awesome. Shout out to Felipe.
Yes, shout out Felipe. To Felipe over in Brazil.
So how far into the next book are you guys?
The first issue's written. Trad's going to start on the art in the next week or two, probably.
Yep, that's what I'm aiming for. And then we'll be silently slaving away in our laboratories and revealing stuff when we can. So,
as comics creators do.
Yes. We are reclusive lot.
Yeah, it's fully outlined, so it's just a matter of writing the scripts and stuff, and I'm going to try to have that done in and around the first week of May. I should be finished up with all the scripts, barring my process of, and this happened with The Strange Town of Luther Strode, too, is I wrote like 3 issues and said, nah, these suck, and started over from the beginning, so.
Yeah, I feel like that happens to people a lot.
That's, rather than, there's a lot of people who do like, oh, I rewrite like each page and all that kind of stuff, and that usually doesn't happen to me either. When I get to the end, it's about 95% what it's going to be, or I just start over from the beginning, which is not particularly time effective, but that's kind of how it rolls. Usually by the time I get to the end of it, if I'm feel it's solid, it's usually just dialogue stuff that I tweak a little bit. But yeah, there exists, I realize I'm starting to ramble, seriously,
that's all right.
there exists issues 2 of 3 scripts scripts for issues 2 and 3 of Luther Strode that are radically different than what we got. Like, Luther kills the bully and gets arrested, and the librarian comes to the police station and basically slaughters an entire police station worth of people, and then Luther spends the rest of the series on the run from the police.
That also sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That's what I said when he told me. I was like, man, that would have been cool, too.
Yeah.
I'm glad we went the route that we did.
You changed this?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what was wrong with it was it didn't focus. There wasn't. It was cool, and there were some good, exciting scenes in there. There's this action bit where Luther faces off a SWAT team that I still think is pretty awesome, and might get recycled into a future part of the series if there's a space for it. But it didn't do the characters justice. There wasn't a development of what was going on with Luther and Petra and Pete and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that was the real heart of it. Like, as cool as those scenes would have been, I thought they were kind of hollow without that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one part of the reason why the book works so well is because all the action directly relates to his relationships with characters in the book as well. So, yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, so have you guys been reading anything really good recently? Got any recommendations for people? I know that's my job, but...
Yeah. What have you been reading? Go for it.
The Secret Life of D.B. Cooper.
Ah, that's a good book. Awesome. What about you, Trad?
I've really been enjoying the mini BPRD. I think it's the Hell on Earth thing. It was drawn by James Herron, and he's like one of my favorites right now. I'm not even like a BPRD guy. I haven't read much of it, but I started picking that up because of the artwork, and it's awesome. So anyone should grab that. Everyone should grab
that. That's awesome. I'll check it out.
I don't really agree with that.
BPRD.
You should check it out. You will enjoy it.
I'm always looking for a point to jump into it.
It's a good jumping on point because it's just like a 3-issue little... self-contained thing.
James Herron is ridiculous. He's actually somebody whose art I was looking at even before I met Trad a couple of years ago. And he just happened to get dark horsed before I could ever approach him to, you know, see if he wanted to work with me. So I really like James's stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks for talking to me, guys. We should probably wrap this up because I think this signing is about to start.
Let's do it.
All right,
hey,
cool.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the interview. I think it turned out pretty well, especially since we did it like 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, it was a little rough watching you guys do it. Everyone looked kind of exhausted.
Yeah, we're all like glassy-eyed and like, just woken up. But either way, it turned out all right. So yeah, so we're going to do that instead of viewer mail this week, but we'll have some more of that next week, back to usual. As always, you can send us questions at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com and send we want people to call our hotline.
Yeah, yeah. So you can leave awesome messages for us to play on the air.
Indeed. Or creepy ones. And that's 703-539-CAST.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, Jared's here, in case you didn't notice, in case you didn't hear his dulcet tones over there.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on, Jared?
Not much. Thanks for turning my mic on, finally.
Indeed. All right, so let's do some reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right.
Okay, let's do this.
Let's do this. All right, so first up we've got, we don't have a lot this week, but we got some cool stuff.
Some good ones.
Yeah, so first we got Harvey Pekar's Cleveland hardcover. Nice. That's by Harvey Pekar and Joseph Remnant. This is not the last thing that Pekar did. I think he's going to have one more thing. But
he's like the Tupac of the comics world.
He is the Tupac of the comics world. He wrote this as a hologram.
His hologram was at Coachella. That was going to be SPX this year.
Yeah. But this is definitely, it seems like his last major big work.
Right.
And it's interesting. It's kind of a mixture of a history of Cleveland and a life story autobiography.
Which kind of sums it up. I mean, he's been associated with Cleveland for so long. I mean, he's always lived there. He's always integrated into his stories, and it's a big part of his life and his work. And I mean, this really goes into it. Like Nick was pointing out that, you know, it just starts off with like, when I was growing up, the biggest thing was that, you know, the Cleveland Indians won the World Series, and I thought they were never going to do it. And there's like this huge, like, what, 10 pages about the lineup of the World Series winning team and
every
stuff
single
like that.
Baseball
yeah
player.
Exactly, like their batting averages and stuff like that. So it's an interesting mix because it does do this very minute minutia about the city, but it's also what was important to him. And then later he starts weaving back and forth between his life and his family and all the important things that happened in his life. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's like the first 40 pages, I think, are just the history of Cleveland. And then it definitely turns into a more typical Harvey Pekar. Nick was saying that the beginning maybe seemed like a little bit like too much of an information dump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really fast. It's like every panel's like in 1848 this happened, then 18 something, like it just goes on. Like every panel is like a different thing happening, which is cool, but like, and it was kind of interesting, but it was just like too much information. It was just like 40 pages of like every panel was a new event happening. There was no like room for any of them to kind of build or
even breathe. Like, yeah. And it's the art's great. Like, Remnant's really good at rendering all that stuff. He does a really good job.
Really good drawing the city too.
But that section just felt a little bit dry to me compared to Picard's normal stuff. Like his sort of grumpy old man type stuff that he usually does.
I didn't mind it so much because he did anchor it saying like the most important thing to me as a kid was the World Series, and then he talks about the World Series. It's not just like, and the team won in 1943 or whatever. Like, he threw in little bits of why it was important to him and also why it was important to the city.
Yeah, and then after that it gets kind of into his life story basically, and even that part was good. It was well written and funny and everything. It was a little repetitive. Like, I felt like I knew all this stuff already.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, not repetitive within the graphic novel, no, but just covering a lot of ground that he's covered before.
Yeah, like, he's like, this is my friend who's autistic. And, like, I was like, oh, yeah, that guy, you know. And
yeah, there's one.
Like, and then I met my wife, and this happened, and then I got a new wife. And I was like, I know all this stuff.
Well, there's that one part where he's like, and then I got cancer, and my wife helped me through it. Our cancer year, a graphic novel that I did earlier. I'm like, fair enough.
But so in a way, this is like, but I would say this is probably like his definitive book. Like, this is the one that covers just more of his life than anything else. I mean, this is from like when he was a little kid up until, you know, close to the very end.
Yeah. If you want a book that tells you the history of Cleveland and the history of Harvey Pekar, this is exactly what you're getting.
They should have called it Harvey Pekar's Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going to read one book by him, Our Cancer Year or Our Movie Year as well, are both.
I think Our Movie Year is better because the art's better than Our Cancer Year.
but it's, you know, it's still Harvey Pekar. He still has that very like idiosyncratic voice that he writes in, and he just does comics like nobody else ever has and probably ever will, because he doesn't approach comics from that kind of nerdy fanboy way. Like some of the best, like even guys like Dan Clowes are like comic strip nerds and stuff, you know.
That's true.
Yeah. Harvey Pekar is just like a regular guy.
He's just straightforward, who's like telling you things.
Yeah, and he sees comics as just that's like
his way of telling stuff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's still great. It's it's a really cool book, and I would say everybody should check it out.
Yeah, I'm a history nerd, and I learned a lot about Cleveland. So I think that's the twist to this is like, even if you love Harvey Pekar, you'll still get something new out of this book.
So now you know a lot about The Mistake by the Lake.
Yep.
All right, so moving on to, what do we got next here? Flex Mentallo, Man of Muscle Mystery. This is a hardcover collecting the long, very, very long, out of print, never collected, right?
Never,
no.
Miniseries by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely.
Crazy that this was never collected.
I will tell you why. This is one of the kind of legends of the comic book history. That obviously Flex Mentallo is a muscle man, but in a superhero vein. So he wears like a leopard print loincloth, and that's it. And he's just completely ripped. But he uses like, he flexes and summons his muscle power to like, that's his superpower basically. Like, he can explode things by flexing and focusing his mind. He's awesome. But there is obviously a lot of influences to the Charles Atlas, you know, hey kid, tired of getting kicked around, you know, send off our thing, which we discussed with Luther Strode. And so much of an influence that they were sued by the Charles Atlas estate.
Really?
Vertigo and DC were sued by them. Interestingly, they won the case against Charles Atlas that this was not a, you know, derivative work, or, you know, it was enough of a parody or whatever it was to stand on its own. Yet the bigwigs, corporate dudes at DC were just like, well, we won the case, but we're not going to mess with this again. Hence, no collection.
And then, 20 years later now? I think it was
95.
So yeah, so almost 20 years later.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah, but it's crazy this has not been in print, because I think this might be the best thing that Grant Morrison has ever written.
I reread it today after having read it. Came out, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I am saying this is Grant Morrison's attempt to either answer or give his take on the Watchmen Dark Knight explosion that Frank Miller and Alan Moore did.
I think that's exactly what this is.
Yeah.
Basically, the four issues of the series seem to follow different time periods in comics, like pretty interesting way. Like the first bit is all about the kind of muscle man golden age, you know, very colorful
kind of pulp
heroes fighting things. And then it gets more into a lot more like drug influence science stuff in the second issue,
which is kind of like the 60s,
which is kind of like
Doctor Strange and
the Silver Age, where everybody
Superman turning into different things every day.
Yeah. And people were either doing drugs or were very influenced by this drug culture that was going on. And then the third issue is, at least to me, it seems like it's kind of really tackling that kind of grim, dark era that you're talking about.
Grim and gritty 80s stuff, yeah.
And that's the part where there's, like, the crazy, like, hedonistic superhero orgy.
Yeah.
Yep. And it gets pretty nuts. And then the fourth issue, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but seems to be about this kind of Grant Morrison's idea of, like, the resurgence of, like, what...
Kind of the future of comics.
Yeah, and, like, what they can be. And that is kind of like, I think, a lot of what he tackled also later in All-Star Superman.
Yeah, there's, I mean,
it's very metatextual.
Yes.
There's a lot on so many levels.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here. And I feel like he delivers that stuff very clearly in this book.
Yeah, it's like a distilled,
it is.
Distilled Grant Morrison in his purest form. And it's like, it's. I feel like it's his one of his most complete things, like, you feel like there's nothing that you need more out of this. Like, you get everything you could possibly want, and every answer, everything is perfectly put together.
Yeah, so the main story is this guy, Wallace Sage, is that his name? I read this a couple
Wally
weeks.
Sage, yeah.
Yeah, and he creates as a child this character named Flex Mentallo, who then comes to life. But then you kind of find out that the inverse is kind of what's really true, and that superheroes have created our existence as a way to hide from this entity that's, like, consuming the universe.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, there's a lot of levels to this that you can...
Yeah.
What is really happening, but these are all different.
But that is definitely a basic, like, one of the basic things that's happening. Yeah. And so a lot of this is told through Wally Sage as he is committing suicide or kind of overdosing on drugs.
At both, basically, at the same time, and flashing back to him as a kid, remembering creating the superhero and then confessing himself and, you know, dreaming about superheroes and how much influence they had on his life while Flex Mentallo was on a typical, like, pulp investigative case, much like Rorschach investigating the death of the comedian, trying to find out who this mysterious group of people who are trying to destroy reality or take down civilization. And then there's a detective who's also involved, and other superheroes are coming to life.
Something really crazy about this is I feel like this is, it's weird because it's such a long time ago, but this is, like, some of the best Frank Quitely art I've ever seen.
So good.
Now, there was a little bit of thing about this was recolored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people prefer the original coloring, but Frank Quitely actually came out and said, look, I was never a huge fan of the original coloring in this book, and I wanted it to be recolored to look more like what my art looks like now.
And this is his colorist, basically.
Yeah, and it's like a guy that he had worked with before and who did a really good job. I didn't think it took away from the book the way I feel like maybe the Killing Joke recoloring kind of took away from some of the personality of that book.
Interesting.
But overall, I mean, I think this is a book that does have a lot of layers, like you were saying, and it's just one of the most interesting things that
you can read
Grant Morrison has ever written.
Read it, reread it.
Yeah, like I said, I reread it after a week or two ago, and I got so much more out of it, and I loved it the first time. Like, there's a scene when, do you remember the scene where he's in the city, like, looking up this twisty little town up to a castle on the hill?
Yeah.
Later, there's another scene looking the opposite direction. I didn't notice it till the third time. I'm like, this is brilliant.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, so... highly recommended. I think when we get to the end of the year this year, this will definitely be up there in our best reprints of the year category. It's so good.
It's really
everybody good. Check it out.
And it's a gorgeous reproduction. It's a slightly oversized, a nice hardcover. It's choice.
It is choice. It is it is top notch stuff. All right, so moving on to Lou Volume 1, Secret Diary softcover by Julian Neal. This is Graphic Universe. Is that the name of this company? And they've been putting out some stuff. They didn't do that ballet book, the dance book, right? I think that was Paper Cuts.
NBM Paper Cuts, yeah.
But they've been doing a lot of interesting stuff, and now they're doing this Lou thing, which is, I guess, a pretty big book in France. And it's just kind of a fun story about a little girl.
It looks like they've been adapting a bunch of, like, graphic novels from France that are aimed at younger readers, and this one definitely is. Lou is a young girl who very... like, the thing I liked about this book, this will be in contrast to Nick and Kevin, I believe, is that... she grows up with a single mother who she never knew her dad, and it's just a very slow, almost character piece where it's slowly developing her and her mother, and yet it's also like, oh, there's a cute... she's about 12 or so. There's a cute boy across the street, and, like, her mother also kind of has a crush on the neighbor in the same apartment building. So a lot of it's just, like, character pieces, but very slowly building up with lots of gags.
Yeah. Now, I had some problems with it, but I think Nick liked it.
No, I liked it a lot.
Oh, hey, Nick's on my side.
I thought it was good. It's like it's pretty interesting because each page is kind of like can stand on its own.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
One page gags, and a lot of the gags were really funny and cute. And I liked the little hints at, like, the past and, like, the the relationship between the mother and daughter is really, really well fleshed out, and it's got a kind of a cool twist ending a little bit.
Yep.
I think that one of the problems Kevin had was the art.
Yeah.
I actually didn't mind too much. I really liked the coloring a lot. I thought it stood out pretty nicely.
But yeah, I see what.
Yeah, no, it does. I will say it does have really good coloring.
Right.
I just the art's very lively, but I just I felt like it was a little too inconsistent for me, and I didn't like some of the character designs. I like Lou's character design, but then I thought the few male characters that were in there were kind of generic, and I really didn't like the design of her mom, which you know, it's a little things.
Yeah, sure.
But. And then as far as the narrative goes, the single page gag things weren't really hitting for me. Like I wasn't chuckling. They weren't really making me smile. Yeah. And then I thought they were maybe coming at weird points where there was like a dramatic bit of narrative going on. And then there would be like a gag page stuck in there that kind of takes you out of it. And then you kind of get eased back in. And I don't know. It just, it felt a little uneven to me, but you know, it's not bad. I just couldn't get into it.
I can see that. No, I understand. I agree that it had some ups and downs to it, but I just think as a whole, I really like the story it built up. And there's already said this came out in 2004, and it's apparently so popular they made an animated show out of it.
Yeah, in France, it's a huge
But there's at least a second graphic novel that should be out in English soon. So
nice.
Yeah, so that's Lou, and it's a comic for kids.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to a book that is definitely kind of uneven but has some great stuff in it. This is the Lovecraft Anthology, Volume 1 soft cover, put out by...
Self-Made Hero.
Self-Made Hero, who is one of these kind of up-and-coming British publishers like Nobrow or Sterling, Blank Slate, who's been doing those Chalk Marks books. They're great. And this features a lot of really good people. I'm going to actually read down this list really quick. I'll read the standouts. Ian Edginton and Disraeli, who, of course, did...
My favorite combo.
Yeah, Kingdom of the Wicked, Leviathan.
Scarlet Traces.
Just awesome. A ton of good stuff. There's some stuff by Ian J. Colbard in here, who you may have heard us talk about in New Deadwardians.
And did all the Sherlock Holmes adaptations.
Yeah, one was written by David Hein with this art by Mark Stafford, which was really good. And... Those are the big standouts for me.
Yeah.
So these are mostly, they're all just adaptations of Lovecraft short stories.
Or so. There's a lot in here. Basically, it's an anthology, but it's all of Lovecraft short stories, mainly the Cthulhu mythos ones. And so they kind of jump around in setting and time and stuff. Yeah.
The weird thing is these don't really feel like adaptations so much as just the text itself with drawings accompanying it. Some of them had a little more of like a comic book feel, Dunwich Horror had like a little more of like a comic book feel, but like definitely like Call of Cthulhu was like pretty much just the text from the book with drawings, which was good. I mean, the stories are great and the art was great, so I can't really complain about that. A few of them were uneven. There's one or two that I was like, this art is really terrible, but the stories are still great, so it didn't really bother me too much.
Yeah, there were like you said, just a couple where the art wasn't really doing much service to the story, and at least one where, like, it was pretty dry. The delivery of the whole thing was pretty dry.
Well, I think Lovecraft in general is just so wordy that unless you go like with Colbard did at the Mountains of Madness and just have huge, beautiful vistas with very little dialogue, it's easy. Like there are a lot of these where it's just huge chunks of like block text that's as captions rather than even dialogue.
And one thing with Lovecraft is, I know people love Lovecraft comics and stuff, but I always felt Lovecraft's biggest strength is his descriptions.
In the imagination.
And the fact that you're left to kind of imagine these things. And it's like Cthulhu in your mind when you read Call of Cthulhu is much worse than whatever's going to be put down on the page, which at this point has become this kind of very recognizable thing.
Yeah.
It's like the exact opposite of an unspeakable, indescribable thing. It's, you know, it's a giant...
If you can buy a plush of something, it's not creepy.
Yeah.
Well, the weird thing is, like, the text is really descriptive, so when you get the pictures accompanying it, it's kind of like...
That's superfluous.
True. Redundant. True.
Yeah. But I will say, Disraeli's rendition of Cthulhu himself is probably one of the best I've ever seen.
It's the most monstrous. It's away from the kind of caricature of just goofy looking Cthulhu almost.
Yeah.
This one like looked like something terrible. It was great.
Yeah, and the Dunwich Horror was really well done. I can't remember the name of the story, but the one that David Hein and Mark Stafford did was like a little more cartoony almost.
No. What was it? What happened?
It's the one where like the pigs are being infected by drinking the water in Arkham and like turning into these like deformed things, and the family is too. It's pretty disturbing stuff, yeah. But that one's really great too. There's enough good stuff in here that I would recommend it. And if you're a Lovecraft fan, I mean,
this is amazing. Yeah, just on a whole, the art is so good on this book.
The thing is, all the stories are great.
Yep.
No matter what, but you know, a few of them have an even art, but the ones that have good art have really, really good art.
Yeah, yeah. Like really, really good art. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the Lovecraft anthology,
Volume 1.
Yeah, Volume 1. Yeah. Yep. So hopefully they get some more good people, and I'll be curious to see what they do. All right, coming up on something that was way more disturbing than the Lovecraft anthology. This is Pandemonium.
Excellent.
This is a soft cover from Humanoids that came out a couple weeks ago, or just last week maybe. But we just got a chance to get to it this week. This is written by Christoph Beck with art by Stefano Raphael. And I'm going to assume I said that right.
Close enough.
And wow, this book is really messed up.
It's so messed up.
Yeah. We were talking about this several times about horror books and what's actually creepy in comics. This is one of the few that like kind of ooged me out and like actually I was tense about what was going to happen to characters. And I still had no idea what was going to happen next in some of these scenes.
Yeah. I mean, the basic premise of this is this little girl has gotten TB, and her mom had TB when she was younger, and they go to this sanatorium to cure her, and it's supposed to be like well renowned, and then of course end up there, and there's some really creepy things going on. The doctors are up to something, you're not quite sure, but they're all kind of creepy, and the girl starts, and actually all the children that are in the hospital that are infected with TB start seeing basically ghosts, because you know, one of the things in it is that the young can see the ghosts.
Yeah, there's definitely the hint that like there's a huge horrible history to the sanitarium, and it's set in the 40s or 60s, when it was
50s,
the 50s,
yeah,
and there's references that back in like the early 20th century and early late 19th century the sanitarium had been running, and terrible things had happened there. And
yeah, it kind of takes place
from then, and
in three different time periods. True. It's like the frame. There's a framing story that takes place in the present day
when they come up to this abandoned sanitarium and they start talking about it. Yeah.
And then the main story takes place in I think 1951.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then there's another story that takes place in like 1938.
Yeah. Okay.
And God, it's so the climax of this book,
amazing,
is so amazing. I want to talk about it, but
that's the whole point. Yeah,
yeah, but
so disturbing,
so disturbing, and just the whole delivery. You know, we talk about how comics are sometimes have a hard time being scary because of the way readers kind of choose their own pacing and can kind of step away from things. But the interesting thing about this book is the story is so engaging, and it's such like a page turner, that you're kind of propelled through it, and these horrible things you can't really turn away from them.
There was one scene that popped up where I was just talking like, about bleep 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 bleep. I just started cursing like crazy. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah,
because it's like it, you don't expect some of the stuff to happen, and when definitely. It does, you're like, wow, this is really great.
You had no idea what's gonna happen.
It's really sick.
I will say this is a bleak book. I mean, definitely don't read this if you want, I don't know, a happy ending or to ever feel good about anything that happens. Terrible things happen to characters.
Definitely one of the best horror comics I've read in a while.
Yeah. And like Jared said, you actually care about these people, which is, you know, sometimes characters in horror movies are just kind of these, you know,
stand-ins to have bad things happen to
them. But in this one, there's really like a strong relationship between the mother and her daughter, and
they're good characters,
relationship with some of the doctors and nurses and other kids and people. It's great.
Yeah. Pandemonium soft cover,
awesome.
Yeah, definitely check it out. All right, next up we got a new book from Peter Bagg. I looked it up today.
Yeah, we had to look it up. Like, how do we say
Baggy?
It?
Baggy.
We looked it up. It's also Lapham. David Lapham.
Lapham. Nice.
Yeah. And Michael Chabon.
Nothing to do with this.
No, nothing to do with this. But yeah, so Peter Bagg is, you know, used to do a lot more than he does these days.
He was like king of the 90s, but the 90s is also when there were not really a lot of great comics coming out. So it was like as an event when someone good came along. And so he was kind of top of the
chops. What was his big one called?
The Buddy Stuff. Like,
Buddy Stuff, yeah.
Yeah, Buddy Does Jersey, Buddy Does Seattle. Especially, I think Buddy Does Seattle is where he hit big because it was during the whole kind of Seattle grunge was scene. The epicenter of like, you know, or perceived culture, to be at least. Yeah. But I'm not always the biggest fan of his. I do feel sometimes like he just came along at a very fortuitous
right.
time.
Yeah.
But I will say this new one, Reset, I think is off to a really good start.
Yeah, it's only a 4-issue miniseries, but this one is much like we've seen in some other comics, like, God, what's the one with, God, Box Office Poison?
The Alex Robinson.
Alex Robinson, yeah, thank you.
Too Cool to Be Forgotten.
Too Cool to Be Forgotten, yeah.
This reminds me a lot of
yes,
that.
Yes, but I think this one, I like the setup even more. But anyway, there's this kind of washed up, failed movie star who is now kind of at his rope's end. He has no career left. He has no money left.
Yeah.
He's basically getting sued. Everything's gone wrong with his life. He's in like rehab programs and everything. And he basically gets recruited to try out a new experimental machine slash hypnosis. Not really sure what it is, but basically a way that will allow people to jump back it through a machine to viewing parts of their old life and relive their life from that point forward, but change things. So you're
that's
not sure.
A reset button.
Right. So you're not sure if this is like just like them programming a computer to do like hypothetical what would really happen, or if they've interviewed people or how it works, but
there's definitely hints that something else may be going on.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like he begins to wonder, you know, how they have all this information. Basically right. the thing they're inserting him in starts at his high school graduation.
Yeah.
And, they have seemed to like have information on everybody that he was around, and they kind of come up with all these quick answers as to how they have that information.
Yeah.
But then there are some implications that maybe
something
this machine
weird
is
going on
something even more than that. Yeah. And at the same time, they seem to be perfectly happy to destroy this guy's career to
yeah.
make sure that he stays
yeah,
a part of this
kind
program.
Of the twist at the end is that they are going above and beyond to force him to be in this
well,
program.
One of the things is that his career is already pretty terrible, and like, he's going on to this to avoid having his own reality show.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, the reset button that Nick mentioned is that at any point during this terrible, you know, re-look viewing process, he can press reset to stop it, but that just means it rewinds to the beginning. He can't pause it. So it's, yeah. he goes back and starts, and it can take a different path.
Yeah, so they intentionally really cool. make this the first moment of this experience like a terrible moment in his life. Yeah. But, no, it's pretty interesting. I mean, that's almost everything that happens in the first issue.
Yeah.
Not to give too much away, but I feel like this is such an interesting book and something that people wouldn't expect from Peter Bagg.
I didn't.
That I don't mind kind of giving a little more information just so people will check it out.
Who knows what's going to happen next? It was very intriguing. Start.
Yeah,
one of the best things, but definitely one of the best things this week.
Yeah,
I thought it was, you know, it was funny and just interesting, and I like the whole premise, and I really want to see more like of what his life happen, how he changes his like past, and you know, just whatever. It's crazy.
Yeah, because there is a lot of setup in this issue, but you got to imagine that after this, it's going to get a lot more into his actual reliving of his life, which should
who
be
knows?
The yeah, who knows? It could go crazy. It could have car chases.
Because the framework has some crazy stuff.
Yeah, but a good book and definitely worth checking out.
Definitely.
I'm telling people to check out everything. I'm like, check it out.
Check it out.
You guys, check it out.
There's a lot of good stuff this week, mostly.
Yeah.
Here's what I do on the podcast. I go, check it out. Moving on.
Moving on. Next, what do we got?
Moving on. Resident Evil number 0 by
Resident
Peter.
Evil.
Sorry, Resident Alien.
What?
I want to stop and talk about Resident Evil for a second.
Which one?
I heard... well, just Resident Evil in general.
Okay.
So the name Resident Evil is just a poor translation of like a Japanese description of the game, like which means haunted house.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like evil residence.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, but anyway, so Resident Alien is the name of this comic, though. This is written by Peter Hogan, not Paul Hogan. Well, I was confused by that. I thought it was written by Crocodile Dundee.
No, mate.
Hulk Hogan?
And not Hulk Hogan either. That his name is like Terry... something, but
Terry Hogan.
And the art in this is by Steve Parkhouse. This is a number 0 issue of what's going to be a 3-issue miniseries.
Yep.
The reason this is a number 0 is it collects some short things that were in Dark Horse Presents, and
that's one of the weird things. I was like, how is this collect in Dark Horse Presents, because it seems like one pretty solid issue.
I think it was the MySpace Dark Horse Presents, so it was like online.
No, it
web
was
stuff.
in the newest
it was thing. Yeah, it was in the new thing.
Never
yeah.
mind.
Yeah, but this is a pretty interesting story. Basically, there's a town, and there's been at least definitely one murder, potentially two murders.
Possibly two, yeah.
Yep.
And there's this alien.
And this is like from a different planet alien.
Yeah, like from a different planet alien who looks very traditionally like a...
One of the greys,
yeah, exactly.
But he seems to have some kind of telepathic power that keeps people from seeing his true face.
So they think he's human.
Yeah, and basically he lives on the fringe, like he lives in a cabin and he just fishes all day. And but he's registered in the town as like a doctor of some sort.
Yeah, and the person that is murdered is the town's doctor.
Yeah.
So they call him in to do some kind of forensics work at first, and then kind of ask him to be the town's doctor
until the replacement shows.
So it's kind of like Doc Hollywood, but with an alien instead of somebody from Hollywood.
Exactly like Doc Hollywood.
It is exactly like Doc Hollywood, isn't it? Except with a murder.
Yeah.
But the alien character is like really interesting. Yeah. Like his perspective on things. Like he's very fascinated by humanity, and
he's been on his own for several years. So yeah. Although he knows it's for his own good, he should not be near people. He's kind of relishing the chance to get back in. And the twist to his power is that he just mentioned they told me in training that some humans would not be affected by my concealing power.
Yeah, yeah, and you get
a very few. But
besides that, you get like maybe one other little glimpse of his previous life,
him or
like
how he got a spacesuit across Earth, and
so all that stuff has me really intrigued. Besides the fact that it seems like an interesting murder mystery, and like this town is kind of covering things up, and I don't know, it's cool. I was really into this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
He's also kind of getting into it as like a murder investigator. Like he's checking out movies and like reading Murr. She wrote books and stuff. Yeah. He's like, I can solve this. It's very.
And I thought Steve Parkhouse's art was interesting. I can't remember if one of you guys said you didn't like it.
No, I liked it a lot. I thought the coloring was a little weird, but overall, I liked it.
Yeah. It's a little washed out. I think it's kind of they're emulating like a watercolor style. Yeah. I actually thought the coloring was all right, but. Yeah. But overall, I think his art style fits the book.
No, it was great.
Yeah, and Resident Alien number 0.
Nothing but praise this week.
Should people check it out?
Yes.
Check it out.
You should buy it.
Check it out.
You should buy it. It's good. Next up, we've got The Shadow number 1.
I don't think we should recommend this.
Should we not? I thought it was good.
Oh, let's recommend this one, too.
This is written by Garth Ennis and Aaron Campbell, and it stars Alec Baldwin.
only who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow.
Alec Baldwin does Batman. this is from Dynamite, right?
Yep,
Dynamite.
Who have been resurrecting a lot of Golden Age characters.
Properties.
They're bringing back the Spider,
Flash Gordon,
whatever
they can get their hands on.
Yeah, basically whatever they don't have
whatever
to pay for.
Yeah, it doesn't require them to have thoughts.
They did that Phantom series as well.
Yep.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff has been a little middle of the road. We did like the Flash Gordon Zeitgeist thing that was coming out because that had Ming the Merciless teaming up with Hitler the Merciless. But this one's by Garth Ennis and. Well, first off, it's not very Garth Ennis-y.
Yeah, no.
But I think in a good way, it's not too terribly Garth Ennis-y.
It's not like very mean.
This is Ennis in the sense that Ennis loves war comics, and he definitely. This is set pre-World War II. Is that
right before World War II?
Yeah, so
this
is like 30s, kind of the very pulpy Indiana Jones era stuff when Nazis are running around and you know they're bad guys, but like the world hasn't turned into war yet. In fact, that's right, because they mentioned like. Even though, like, you know, Japan's invaded China and, you know, Poland, maybe even Poland been invaded, they're like, but America's not going to get caught into this war. Yeah. We're very isolationist. So it's a very pulpy adventure when you know bad guys are out there, but, you know, not big consequences. But definitely lots of mentions of Japanese atrocities. And
which is very much rooted in what kind of The Shadow was about when it originally.
Yeah, because his big thing is he's like an expert in... like Far East antiquities and stuff like that. And that ties into this.
Yeah, his powers come from like Mongolia or something like that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and his power to shoot lots of people.
And
that ties pretty directly into this. Kind of the story is a little muddy. I don't know, because there's a lot of espionage and stuff going on that I wasn't getting a full grasp of it, but I feel like that's just because we're just getting into it.
Yeah. Right.
I thought the way The Shadow was written, like his dialogue and stuff is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very much like what it should be, like
in his alter ego or as The Shadow?
In his alter ego. As The Shadow, he's just like Mr. I know what evil lurks.
Yep.
But his alter ego, I can never remember his name. He's
Cranston.
Lamar Cranston or something like that. It's very like, you know, playboyish, very like 30s dashing Bruce Wayne-ish guy. Yeah. And I think Ennis actually really nailed all that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought it was a good start to.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever been a Shadow fan, this is definitely exactly what you want out of it. And even if you're not, if you're into that kind of pulpy style, you'll love this. It's great.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see where it goes. I didn't think I was going to like this.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the main plot seems to be like there's some Japanese ex-officers who are in military intelligence who are in America who are involved with mob or it's convoluted.
Yeah, like I got the, yeah, I got all that, but then yeah, it was like it was like it was weird. I don't know.
But a lot of people are shot to death. Yeah, it's kind
of
cool.
I'm sure there'll be some sort of mystical stuff that happens at some point too. And
we can only hope.
Yeah, but some good gunplay in this as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, a cool. Yeah, cool book.
Cool start.
All cool books.
Yep.
Everything's cool.
Check it out.
Oh man.
Check
it out. Speaking of cool books, we have like two more amazing books. We only have two things left to talk about.
Hit me.
But the next one's The Shark King by Arkakuo Johnson.
So good.
Holy snap.
Yeah, this book is beautiful. I think this might be the best thing that came out this week.
No.
This is Tune Books, which is our.
It's up there.
Is it Raw?
It's Raw's kids division.
Yeah, it's like Art Spiegelman and Francois Molly. Yeah, and they've done, what have they done? Like Otto's Orange Day, Little
the Bear
Mouse.
One.
They've just done a ton of really good stuff.
Basically, they do kids books for three age groups, very beginning readers, like two-year-olds, like early school kids, and then like late elementary kids. Yeah. So they're the three levels of reading. And this one is definitely like later advanced readers, late elementary school.
Yeah, I'd say this is probably for like 8 to 10 year olds. Yep.
Who's this guy that draws it?
Arkakuo Johnson. He did a book called The Night Fisher, an amazing, amazing book when it came out.
Graphic novel that just blew people's minds.
Yeah, and he's done a lot of illustration stuff too. He was in the Beasts books that that were put out.
Yeah,
and yeah, I don't know. He grew up in Hawaii, and this story takes place in Hawaii, and it's just I don't know if it's based on an old folktale or
yep. There's a thing in the back that described that there's in fact the myth of. Like the super shark, like the shark god, basically, who has all these crazy adventures and stuff, and his hungry child. And so this is basically the story of the shark king and how he falls in love with a human woman. And they have a kid who is just like this kind of troublesome, ravenous. Super hungry. He has like a giant mouth instead of a fin on his back. So he's not like a shark boy. He's just a kid who has a giant extra mouth on on his back. And he just wants to eat everything all the time and stealing people's food. And
that seems awesome. To be a kind of characteristic of a lot of like Eastern and like Hawaii things of like, you know, children or adventurers being like very ravenous and like eating lots of food and stuff like that all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the basic of the story. Kind of because this kid is eating everything, he's eating all the fish on the island. And so people have nothing to eat.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, you know, the island kind of turns on him when they find out about him, and then some
monster shark kid,
some crazy beautiful things happen after that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's if I can say one thing about this book, it's like that it's really elegantly done,
right?
And it's the art's beautiful.
Yeah, it's like Alex Toth sort of, I think.
Yeah, like very strong lines and very like big bold shapes, and it's great. It's so good.
Yeah,
it's definitely the kind of thing where you just have to read it and look at it and
be like pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it's a short book.
Yeah,
but, it took me like 2 minutes to read it, but
yeah, but it's,
I loved it.
It's so wonderful. It's really good stuff.
It's great.
Check it out.
Moving on. All right, so we have one more thing this week. This is The Survivalist. This is a new book by Box Brown, who's done other stuff and is awesome.
Kind of tore up the Ignatzes last year.
He did, yeah. There's a pretty good picture of him high-fiving people on somewhere when he won his Ignatz Awards. But
I high-fived him, actually.
This is another one of these Chalkmarks books,
which
they put out Mr. James Teacher and Dinopopolis, right, as the first two. And this is that line we've talked about it before. It kind of emulates the Fantagraphics Ignatz Coconino Press style book. And this one is pretty awesome.
I feel like this might be the best thing that came out this week.
There's so many good books.
There's a lot of good stuff.
The basic premise of this is there's a guy who lives in his parents' house, but his parents had built a bunker underneath the house, in case of a nuclear apocalypse. And so he basically lives in the bunker and just, you know, hangs out there and smokes weed and gets high and watches TV and tries to draw comics.
What is his personality, Nick?
he's very conservative, and he listens to a bunch of conservative radio shows, and he thinks that that the world's going to end and that the pharmaceutical companies have poisoned everybody. And he's against pretty much every corporate thing that you can imagine.
Bit of a conspiracy nut too.
Yeah, I'd say he's kind of a libertarian conspiracy nut. Like the kind of guy that just listens to too much talk radio and believes everything they say.
And then, and I don't know if, how much we. I guess
you gotta say something.
A meteor hits the Earth.
Yep. Yeah, the apocalypse happens.
I'm gonna put it out there.
Yeah, and he gets to use his thing, and he gets more time to draw his comics, and so he just kind of lives in his shelter and draws his comics, and then he meets this woman who's living in the rubble of his old house, and it's becomes a story about their relationship, and he's like trying to get her to read his comics, and
yeah.
That doesn't go very well, and it's funny so and kind so of good. Sad, and just it's good.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to give away the fact that the meteor hits the Earth because the big thing in this book is the relationship between him and this woman that he meets.
Yeah, they're like not sure if anybody else is still alive or
And it's kind of about how he learns to be less self-centered and kind of learns that, you know, you maybe sometimes you have to take care of other people besides yourself, and you know that maybe having a connection with humanity is a good thing.
Yeah. I think that's the more thing. Maybe just like he connects with humanity.
Yeah,
yeah. And some of the things he thought maybe aren't really as true as he thought,
or important.
Yeah,
yeah, or
they don't matter. Yeah, he's like, "Are you Muslim?"
Yeah,
she's like, "What does that even matter?"
And then he freaks out, and about her being Muslim, and then immediately realizes, like, who cares? What does it even matter?
Like, we're the last people on Earth.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought this was.
Amazing.
It's really good.
In a short thing, I guess it's probably about 50 pages, right? He manages to tell like a really complete story and have like a really strong character arc.
Yep.
And but also like a lot of incident and a lot of interesting things happen. But then the story has a lot of chance to breathe too, because a lot of it's just about them kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of there was this movie from New Zealand that came out called The Quiet Earth.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Which is this amazing movie about the world ending and this kind of guy coming to terms with it, and this kind of reminds me of that. But then it has that added element of this relationship that he has.
Yeah, it's a little more like a happy, because he's kind of like the main character is kind of happy that the world ended. He's like, I got time to draw my comics.
Yeah,
his life gets better after the apocalypse. Yeah. Really,
but then it's really heartbreaking too. Yeah. The story itself. Yeah, but I mean, just great. It's funny, this week it was like amazing. There was so much good stuff.
Everything was really good to phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was like there's no like nothing even kind of bad.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, if Flex Mentallo had actually come out this week for me, that would have been the best book of the week.
Yeah.
But Shark King and Survivalists are both really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
Yeah. All right, well that's it for this episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
We check all these things out.
We love comics.
We kept it under. They air swell. We kept it under an hour for once in our whole lives.
What?
Yeah, unless you guys want to talk for 7.5 more minutes about something.
Nah.
Let's not do that then.
Let's get this over with.
All right, I think we're going to do the podcast a day later next week.
Yep.
Because I got stuff to do.
Yeah.
We all got stuff
to do. We all got stuff to do. We're busy people.
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, we'll see you guys then.
See you.